I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast. Dan Favalli, Hardwood Knox, Bleacher Report, Blue Wire co-worker is here. Dan, good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you doing, Chase?
Doing pretty well, man. Lot of NBA stuff happening right now. I don't know if you saw the Hawks last night. Beautiful shot distribution. It was great. Like Trey, 16 shots. Capella, Collins, Herter, Bogey, everybody, Lou, all in that 12 to 16 range. It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I am still so interested. I don't want to say I have a lack of feel for that team, but if they ever get fully healthy this season, when you're still dealing with injuries to, you know, I think we could write off Chris Dunn at this point, but, you know, Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, that team is super deep and interesting. And like you said, if they're going to spread the joy around on offense like that to all their guys, and Clint Capella is going to be defending like he has been all year, they could make some noise in the playoffs. I mean, you look at the top three teams in the East, I don't think you'd pick them against any one of those teams, but if something just goes their way, it feels like they have the talent to be probably that most dangerous dark horse outside of the top three.
Where they're getting seeded is going to be interesting. Like, we're going to talk a lot about the Knicks on this podcast today, but like, they're right now, the playoffs started today, they would get the Knicks in a 4-5 matchup. And that's the best case scenario for the Hawks, because I'm nervous about the Heat Celtics. Like, I think they get swept by the Heat. They get the Heat. The Celtics, they lose that series. Probably go 6 or 7, but they lose that one. But Knicks, I mean, the Knicks would be a weird, interesting matchup. Capella would have a lot of fun with Nerlens Noel inside. And I'm interested to see what happens when Julius Randle challenges Capella. The rebounding chops that the Hawks just have, and like when Capella and Collins are playing together like they are, like it's unfair. They had like 34 boards between the two of them last night against the Magic. I don't know. I like that matchup a lot. I think RJ, like the way the Knicks are set up, I don't know. I think the Hawks would do well with that group. I'd be interested to see who the Hawks put on RJ. But also I don't know. I think that'd be a fun thing. And, seeing Elfrid Payton fly around trying to not, get in Bogey or Trey's way would be fun.
Please no, with Elfrid Payton. Just please no. Yeah, that would be, I think that would be I don't want to say our best shot at a super entertaining first round matchup, but it feels like there'd be a lot of formalities no matter who's going to win the play-in. Maybe if the Heat or Celtics end up in that seven spot, one of those teams, you could see them like really, you know, to the number, let's say if it's they're going up against the number two spot, like maybe that's something that could be interesting. But if the Nets stay at number two and get fully healthy, there would be an air of, oh, well, that's hopeless. So I'd be rooting for Knicks Hawks if you just want high value entertainment in the first round. And I didn't even think about the RJ Barrett question of defending him for the Hawks. I think at full strength, they probably have the personnel to do it. Just you could use Cam Reddish, you could use Chris Dunn, and then you have DeAndre Hunter.
Those guys are gone, yeah.
Yeah. But if not everybody's healthy, you know, if all three of those guys are still injured or banged up, that certainly complicates matters for them. But that would be, you know, for two teams, I think maybe people, at least nationally, I'm sure locally their fans have a feel, but they don't have like a great feel of what they are. Even though the Knicks have had relatively good health, the Mitchell Robinson stuff aside, I think people still don't have an idea of how good RJ Barrett has become or how skilled their defense actually is. They look at the shot profile and think that something's wrong there. And then just the Hawks, with all the injuries that they've had, Trae Young's been a lot more up and down this year than he was last year. So that would be a super fun first round matchup, and it's probably the one, just from a basketball guy who wants that entertainment in the first round, that would be the matchup I'm most intrigued by, because I don't know that there is a team that's going to upset Philly, Brooklyn, or Milwaukee in the first round.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's upsetting the top three. I think there will be pressure on Milwaukee in the top three, but I don't think so. It's also just like, it's interesting you point out the health stuff, and I've seen that a lot from Hawks fans lately. I'm just like, oh, when they get health, I'm like, no, I want Gallo to be ruled out for the season. I want that over. The Gallo experiment, I want that off. Just cross him off. I'm good. Solomon Hill can get those back up 4 minutes. Solomon Hill's been great. I'd want Hunter back because I'm just, Herter's been really good of late, but he's a streaky guy, and I don't imagine this is going to continue on to the playoffs. So I'd rather get Hunter back in the mix, and he was just playing so well before the injuries really derailed his season. Get Snell in there. I don't need Gallo anymore. I don't want the Hawks to get healthy. I don't want Chris Dunn to be trying force fed back in this rotation, because Goodwin and Lou are playing really well, backing up Trey. That I'm pretty happy. Bogey needs a lot of minutes. I'm okay. I don't need everybody to be healthy. I really just need Collins and Capella to stay healthy, because I think that's one of the interesting wrinkles about this team, is that the rebounding chops. Like, we know that rebounding is not as important as it used to be, but these two, what they did against the Magic last night and what they do when they're on the court together, it's pretty brutal, Collins and Capella inside.
Yeah, and they probably have their weakest, I guess, on the front line behind those guys, just when you look at what is Onyeka Okongwu going to give you, and then even if Gallo is healthy, been up and down this year too, and he's just not going to give you a ton defensively if he's playing the four, or if you really want to downsize and give him to the five. So it's really imperative that those two stay healthy. Collins has defended a lot better this season as well, and just as I mentioned before with Capella, like, you look at any, you know, advanced defensive metric, like, they're going to be in love with Capella more than usual this season. He's been an absolute monster on both ends for them, and I think
he's been the most important Hawk this season, Clint Capella.
That's what I've heard a lot of people say, and I guess I wouldn't disagree. Trae Young is still the most important Hawk if they want to win a playoff series, in my opinion, just because he's the guy that's going to have to up the offense in those tough, tight situations.
I think it'd be Bogey.
I mean, he has the potential to do it, but that's just like, Bogey to me has always been that secondary scorer. Like,
right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, Trae, I think, will get his, but I think if Bogey is on in that series, and like the Knicks don't have any, like the Knicks aren't sure what to throw at Bogey because they're spending so much attention on Trae, they like Bogey going off, because Bogey has just been outrageous from three, and if he's shooting like that in the playoffs, that's just, it's gonna be really hard to beat the Hawks in a seven game series in the first round at least.
Yeah, I think you could probably point to who's going to be the number two offensive guys, the X factor for them in any playoff series, and right now that I think the no-brainer option would be, you want Bogey to be that guy.
Absolutely. James Harden out maybe until the playoffs. Are you scared? Should Brooklyn Nets fans be scared of where we're at with Harden and his hamstring?
I don't know that they should be scared, but I mean, this bad news is starting to pile up for Brooklyn. And just insofar as, like, how much bad news can you have when there's still Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden on the roster? But now Durant's dealing with another thigh issue. You have the James Harden hamstring issue. Kyrie Irving looks healthy, so you always have that. This sort of vindicates them pulling off the James Harden trade, because now you always have a megastar to lean on when you're dealing with these injuries. I still come back to, even if they are fully healthy leading into the playoffs, one, how long does it take? We can assume Kevin Durant will just come back sometime before the playoffs. It seems like he's day-to-day right now with that injury. But if James Harden isn't ready until the playoffs, how much ramp-up time does he need? Is he on a minutes restriction to start the playoffs, which would be weird? And regardless of all of that, this big three has still only played in 7 games together. And it was really like 6 and change because they had that game where Durant wasn't a start, but then he was cleared to play and then was pulled because he wasn't actually cleared to play. So I'm a big believer in these formations take time and they just rarely come together so seamlessly. A LeBron AD partnership is the exception. This team can still be really good. And I understand why people would build them as the favorite if they're at full strength. But I think we've officially reached the point, not just because of James Harden's injury, but their lack of experience together this year, where it feels like we shouldn't be just penciling them in as that no-brainer Eastern Conference winner, let alone title favorite.
That's interesting. I think it's actually maybe good that Harden's missing time now. Like, haven't we always just said he's just run into the ground in the regular season in Houston for years, just what he has to do to keep the Rockets afloat and winning a bunch of regular season games, that now he was playing at an MVP level, and now if you did rest him and make sure that hamstring's right, like, give him time before the playoffs when it really, really matters, where they really need him to not die late in playoff series. I don't know. I think it's good. And Kyrie's just playing out of his mind right now. He was great last night again. And also, I think they're just going to err on the side of crazy caution. And I think KD is going to be okay. I think the thigh contusion is another just freak thing, but they're just being extra cautious with them. That dude like came in and immediately dropped 33. Like, it's just, KD's fine. Like, KD is just going to come back in and it'll be fine. Like, I think the Nets are, maybe they won't be as much of a cakewalk as we would like to believe in the East for them to get out, but I think it's very unlikely they don't make it out of the East at the very least. I don't think they're winning the title. I have the Clippers still winning the title. I think where they're at right now, the Clippers still stand out the most to me, but I think it's just going to be very difficult for the Sixers to score enough if this group is even remotely healthy. And then the Bucks are just, we know what the Bucks are, and they're a worse version of what they were even a year ago. So I don't know. I just, the East is not that interesting at the top. The East, I think, is going to, unless you're like a, I can talk myself into the Heat guy again, person. I don't know. I think the East might be a little less interesting than even it was a year ago.
Yeah, I would put, I get the concerns about the Sixers. I'd probably push back against Milwaukee, even though their record and, you know, point differential don't reflect it. They've done a lot of different things this year that I think could serve them well in the playoffs.
Like what?
Using Giannis more as a screener. You have Drew Holiday, who's just going to give you more from scratch creation from the perimeter than Eric Bledsoe ever did. And his defense is, you know, whatever version of Eric Bledsoe the Pelicans are getting this year has been bad, but he's an upgrade even at the best of Eric Bledsoe defensively. So Milwaukee, they're so top heavy. So if they have one injury and that their best closing unit still isn't solidified, so there's concerns there. But looking at both Philly and Milwaukee, they have the defenders, they have the collective length to, I think, slow down Brooklyn at least a little bit. And if you can give yourself a chance there, the Nets defense still isn't going to be anything special in the playoffs, regardless of who they're starting at center. And who they're, you know, just starting in the front court in general. So, and even with, you know, KD dealing all these like lower limb injuries, is going to be less of an asset insofar as it even was one for them defensively than most people expected. So I just think the Nets are, I wouldn't panic, but I think they're a lot more vulnerable to Philly and Milwaukee specifically and exclusively. There's not another team that I would pick to potentially beat them. I think they're more vulnerable in that conversation than we've really talked about to this point.
Yeah. I mentioned the Clippers. I still think they're going to win the title. I think they're, as of this recording, 41-19. No one really cares. They won like 9-10. That Paul George is playing at an MVP level right now for LA. They do some really cool stuff. I was watching some action with them in the Blazers last night with the stuff that he has with Zubac, and he has a really good chemistry with Zubac, and he's able to do a lot of point forward stuff that he was not doing last year, and he's just like they do some really good off ball stuff. Like the Clippers, like it just seems like it all looks a lot more innovative, and it looks a lot more like an offense that will work come crunch time in important playoff series. And also, just this is the kind of way to use Paul George with I don't know, the dribble handoffs and just finding avenues. Like, they are, like, Paul George is a better passer than he gets credit for, and I like this group. Kawhi didn't play last night. Lillard didn't play. But, like, you look at it and you're jotting notes, then you're like, this makes sense. Like, the Clippers have their hierarchy. They know where they are. Terrence Mann's good for them. Like, I'm a big Clippers believer. I think this looks like a different team. And I think even with Kawhi missing for a week and Paul George's toe, I don't know. I'm still pretty optimistic right now. And I think the Clippers aren't getting enough love nationally. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. Still just feel like we're hanging on to their early season struggles. And Paul George has sort of popped under the radar. And he was talking previously about how the toe injury was really hampering him. And it doesn't seem like it's been hampering him for the last month or whatever. He's averaging like 25 points and 6 assists while flirting with 50, 40, 90 shooting.
He's dominating. You watch these games, like, he is dominating.
And there's definitely people pointed this out earlier in the year, and just watching them, I didn't see it or necessarily sense it, feel it, whatever. But now when you watch them, and the Blazers game on Tuesday night was a good example, like, the ball moves more. There's more stuff happening off the ball. And so that gives them another level and gear on offense. Rondo has worked out really well for them too overall. And that seems like, I still think they gave up too much to get him, but that feels like it's a win-win trade for Atlanta and LA right now, based on what's currently happening on the court. As you mentioned, Terrence Mann has given them some really good minutes. Marcus Morris has perked up a little bit this year. The injuries with them are always a concern, but you know Kawhi Leonard, at least. Patrick Beverley is definitely a wild card, but you know that Kawhi Leonard, will be ready in the postseason. And I think probably the one concern or two concerns that are fair still with them is that their crunch time defense, and even the offense, Rondo didn't close the game against the Blazers, but maybe you believe that if they really need someone to delineate touches, that he'll come in. But they don't get to the rim a ton, and I'm not a big believer in free throw attempt rates hurting you in the playoffs. We've seen it with Lou Williams. He falls off a cliff because the foul baiting doesn't work. But it'd be nice to have someone other than Zubats, or Terrence Mann is probably just the second best guy on the team at putting that pressure onto the rim. And then there
could Art tries, he just doesn't get foul call.
That's true. And I sort of alluded to before, their defensing crunch time has been weird. It's such a small sample size. I don't necessarily want to read into it, and it's just had their peaks and valleys. So there are some concerns there, but where the West has those five contenders, and it felt like, or people kept putting them clearly at the bottom of that, the Jamal Murray injury in Denver clearly changes that pecking order. But the Clippers are sort of creeping up to the territory of, oh, are they actually the biggest threat to come out of the West again? And that's not a conversation that's really been had at all since the beginning of this year.
No, I just really hope we get a Western Conference round two of Jazz, Lakers, and Clippers, Suns. That's what I'm rooting for, really, really badly. That'd be awesome. That's what I want.
Those would all be interesting matchups. If you know me at all, I'm all in on the Suns. So
I want to be all in on the Suns. Suns make sense. They're nine guys. Like, why is Jay Crowder out of the starting lineup? Why'd they insert Saric back in there?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
Saric back at the four and Crowder off the bench now. Why are they tinkering? What is Monty doing going back and forth? Do you have a preference there?
Yeah, I mean, it would not be to have Saric and DeAndre Ayton play together. I wasn't sure if that, this might be like them trying to cater to matchups. You're going up against Milwaukee, had Brook and Giannis, so you're thinking about that. But Jay Crowder is like the ideal Giannis defender to me that they have.
I don't think there's an ideal Giannis defender. Can I just say there's no ideal Giannis defender? There's no such thing. That person does not exist.
But I think for the Suns specifically, Jay Crowder, you could try out Torrey Craig. I think DeAndre Ayton had some good minutes against him in that game, so I'd assume it's more matchup stuff. Maybe they're also trying to just inject some interesting things into Saric, who's been not as good lately, and the lineups with him at the five leading those bench units have not been as potent. So maybe they're just trying to futz and fiddle with that. But if you're Jay Crowder, like, you've seen Monty Williams kind of experiment with this framework, not Saric specifically, but benching you and putting someone else in the starting unit, and it just hasn't worked before. And so I would start Jay Crowder I think regardless of matchup to me if I were the Suns.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. Also, don't really understand that Cameron Payne's just a solid backup point guard in Phoenix now. Like, what is this? He's just fine. He gobbles up the stat line. He'll get some boards, assists, and like he's fine. It's plus minus every game I'm pulling through, and I'm like, huh, Cameron Payne's fine. He bounced around a lot and just fell off, and then suddenly good. I shouldn't say good, but average. NBA point guard. Like, suddenly the Suns just have competency at the point guard spot all over the place.
I think because it's players like that doing it, even looking at Saric being their primary backup five, or leaning on someone like Torrey Craig now. That is why people seem to distrust the Suns, mm-hmm. is they look at, like, is there that proven depth there? And a lot of their, you know, role players and one of their star players in Devin Booker don't have that playoff experience. I just think they've been so good for so long, and no, Torrey Craig isn't going to shoot a bajillion percent from three forever, and we have to see him hit those looks in the playoffs. There's just a lot to the supporting cast, including Cameron Payne, that is more real than not. And that's why I do. Cameron Payne is someone who, yeah, not a guy who's going to get to the rim for you a ton, but his jitterbug offense that's going to help you in the playoffs. And he's now been playing at this level since the bubble last season. And so this isn't just some anomaly.
What do you see differently with Ayton? Because, like, his stuff is good, and I think he's now a better defender than people give him credit for. I think Ayton has actually, like, quietly come along really nicely for Phoenix.
Yeah, he's definitely been a roller coaster all year, and I'd be more concerned about, you know, there were challenges for him defensively if he was coming out too far before, and teams were sort of learning that he wasn't holding up the greatest against all these switches, but he can still do that. And even the good possessions he had against Giannis, like, there's that potential there, especially when he's fully engaged. The offense, it's been better over the past few weeks, particularly their last 8 or 9 games or whatever it's been. But he's so, that's his wild card skill or swing skill. It seems like sometimes he struggles to score within the flow, and he'll be settling for jumpers or fadeaways instead of rolling hard to the rim or trying to put pressure on the rim and drawing fouls. Still isn't getting to the line at all, but more of his looks are coming in the restricted area than before, and he's taking fewer jumpers as a percentage of his shot attempts. And if he continues this stretch, and this is the player you get in the playoffs, where, yeah, it's still dicey if he's going to set screens for you. Like, he's just not the best decision maker immediately after that. But he's making smarter decisions, at least with the ball, and being more aggressive in general at both ends. That's huge. I don't know if he gives you that third star, but it gives you a situation where, you know, you have someone in theory. There is no ideal Anthony Davis defender, but that's sort of, you know, now there's Jay Crowder and DeAndre Ayton are two guys that you can throw up against Anthony Davis and point to, rather than having, you know, just one of those guys or zero of those guys. So he's, I wouldn't say he's their most important player leading into the postseason, but he's definitely their X factor.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him. Like, that's the other thing, is, like, there's a lot of wild cards. We don't know what Devin Booker will be like in a deep series. We have an idea of what Chris Paul is going to be like in deep playoff series. But, you know, we haven't seen Cam Johnson. Does he go off a couple games? We haven't seen Mikal Bridges in this situation. We haven't seen Darius Saric really in this situation. We haven't seen Ayton, obviously, in this situation. Like, I'm just really excited about to see the Suns play competitive, important basketball come playoff time. Like, I'm really excited to see them go against. That's why I kind of want to see them, the Clippers or the Lakers, in round 2. I want to see it early. I want to see them go at those teams and see what they could do, because I don't know. It just sucks. The Nuggets are just out. Like, the Nuggets, the all-time great Jokic season, and it just doesn't matter. Like, it's just, it's over. Unless you're a big Austin Rivers guy. Is Austin Rivers fixing the Nuggets playoff chances or title chances, Dan?
No, I don't think he's fixing
it. I don't think so.
But they have played surprisingly well without Jamal Murray so far. And it's sort of a situation where you can't envision them coming out of the West, but it also wouldn't shock me to see them win 2 playoff series and make it back to the Western Conference Finals. It's just going to be a lot tougher. And I think his absence inherently puts a cap on their ceiling. Even if Michael Porter Jr. just, you know, continues going kaboom, you're never going to replace the combination of Jamal Murray's face-ups and tough shot-making with his playmaking. He was giving you some tough defenses for stretches against opposing guards too. And they are, you know, players on the roster that bring elements of that now, but there's no one guy that melds all of those skills together.
Triple J returning from Memphis very soon. Memphis obviously going to be in the play-in situation out West. The Grizzlies are a hard team to get a good read on. They're quickly falling into the too many young guys category. But Jaren Jackson Jr., I like his shot. It's one of the weirder ones that works. With Jonas getting banged up, they've kind of gotten hit with the injury bug a little bit, but also Jonas has played really well for them. Where does Jaren Jackson fit in, and are you excited to see him back in Memphis?
Yeah, I'm super excited. He's, you know, their second most important long-term player still, and I think he brings a lot of what they've needed. Their, you know, their offense this month has been surprisingly good. They're second in points scored per possession, per cleaning the glass, since April 1st, but their Achilles heel over the entire season is they don't shoot enough threes. They're 28th, I think, in three-point attempt rate, and they're 19th in three-point accuracy. he helps them with both. Just someone who will chuck a ton of threes, as we saw last season, and they're going to go in. That gives Ja Morant more room to operate. Even Kyle Anderson, who's hitting threes this season, more room to operate. It just does a ton for them. And I don't know what he nudges their offensive ceiling to. We have to see how many minutes he's going to play over the next couple weeks. But this is a, you know, this is an, I agree with you that they're a tough team to get a hold on, but they're a scary team. Like, you know, you don't want to face Dame or Luka in the first round if you're one of the upper echelon teams, but the Grizzlies feel like that squad where the pre-superstar Clippers, where it was, they're not going to beat you, but you're going to feel that 5 or 6 game series.
Do you want to see them in the round one matchup? Like, do they pose any real threat to the Jazz in round one?
I don't think so. It's just, you know, do the Spurs or the Warriors pose any real threat to the Jazz in round one? I guess you just default to Golden State there because they have Steph. But there, I would argue their supporting cast is just so much more unpredictable than the talent that's around Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. right now. And so there's a chance that Memphis gives whoever finishes number one in the West, it'll probably be Utah or Phoenix. There's a chance that Memphis, you know, should they end up being the 8 seed, there's a chance Memphis does give them a better series. But I have to default to Stephen Curry at this point.
I do too, but like you said, watched a lot of Warriors this year. Like, this is a really bad roster. Like, this is a really bad roster, and this is what happens when you build a dynasty, and the dynasty gets expensive, and you have to go around the edges, and you have to settle for the Jordan Pools, the Nico Mannions of the world, the Toscano Andersons, like all those guys. Like, it's just bad. And Kelly Oubre now back on the bench, which is where he is playing better as of late. Wiggins playing 41 minutes and getting some cardio the other night. It's bad. I mean, Kevon Looney being back at the starting spot is huge for them because he's actually a helpful basketball player in the year 2021. And those Wiseman minutes in the starting group were really bad, and Wiseman's just not there. So that will help them in a series against Utah. I don't think they pose a real threat. I think they might get a game or two. It's going to kind of look like the Russ OKC teams, I think, at the end before he got traded. That's what it will look like. We're like, they don't win the series. They don't really have a shot, but Steph's gonna have a game or two where he just puts him on his back and wins a game, and it's just like, oh my god, this person is insane. But their team stinks around him, and they're just not gonna be able to score enough. Now, do I think Utah's gonna run into the buzzsaw in round two or three? Yes. Like, you can go ahead and pencil Utah is not winning the West. Like, Utah, I am so mad at Utah. Like, I'm gonna be mad at Utah for the foreseeable future. Like, I'm disgusted they didn't go after a Jeremy Grant or a Lou Dort or whoever. Just add some sort of wing to prep them for a LA series, whether it's the Clippers or the Lakers. Like, the Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, Bojan stuff is going to cost them. And I'm so annoyed because they're so good. I like Mitchell. I love Conley. Gobert's just been insane. They've solved pick and roll and pick and drop basketball. But, like, not addressing that and just betting on their group, I think will ultimately cost them.
Yeah, I just don't know that that player you're referencing was out there even when they had money to spend during the offseason in which they got Bojan Bogdanović to Utah. And that's just the problem with that. And I agree that that seems like it could be their fatal postseason flaw, who is their bigger wing defender. It's just, it's not Joe Ingles. It's not Royce O'Neal's too small to do that. You know, you've seen like interesting things from George Yang and Maione, but like those guys are not the answer for them. And so that seems like what they're going to run into in the postseason. And you also just have to look at, you know, Donovan Mitchell, is he going to be fine after he comes back from this ankle injury as well?
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, Utah fans. Like, I enjoy watching your team. I enjoy watching Utah. Love your guys. Just, it's like, if I had to do a higher, like, if you had to do a list right now, it is April 21st, most likely to come out of the West as of right now, in order of the top four, how would you do it?
Top four, I think this might be the coward's way to do it, but I'm probably displacing the Nuggets just from the, you know, they're fifth of that top five. And I would probably go, I think right now I'd be Lakers just because I won't doubt LeBron and AD. You have to tell me that they're not playing for me to not put the Lakers. I'd probably go Lakers, Suns, Clippers, Jazz.
That's fair. Right now I'm going Clippers, Suns, Lakers, Jazz.
I'm just curious, like, what is the argument against the Lakers?
Their health and what they had to do last year, like the amount of tread, the gauntlet they ran through in the bubble.
But now their stars like aren't going to have that tread after missing all this time.
But I think the AD stuff's terrifying. Like the pre-Achilles stuff, AD has mostly been injured his career, right? Like AD is an injury prone dude, and we love AD. He's amazing and he's great and he was awesome for LA last year. I'm not betting on AD being 100% the rest of the way. I think this is a real thing, and I think it's just going to be something that's just going to be limiting for him. And I think it's just going to be very, very difficult for the Lakers to go back to back with a better Western Conference this year. I'm just betting against them doing that. I think it's just going to be significantly more difficult.
There's definitely something to the effect that the road out of there is going to be harder, because if they finish, let's say they just finished fifth where they are right now, which seems probably like the most likely outcome, you're going to end up probably playing the Nuggets in round one.
Like you're throwing 80 at Jokic.
And the Jazz, and then the Suns or the Clippers. So like, yeah, that's a tough road to go through, but you might have to go through like some version of that in the latter. Like it's the difference of, to me, one tough playoff round matchup, because you're always going to have two difficult ones probably if everything goes chalk. So, and look, there's a chance, like if they were one in the West or two, like, you know, going up against Luka or Steph in the first round isn't going to be a cakewalk either.
I guess it wouldn't be a cakewalk, but it would be a lot more manageable, and I think they're a lot less stressed in that situation. But if they have to go Jokic and Gobert back to back to start off, I don't know. I think it's just going to be significantly more difficult road for this group. But I mean, it is LeBron and AD, so we should not discount it. I just think it's going to be hard. The Knicks. Do you like, what is the Zion thing? Like, he likes Madison Square Garden. Why do people do this? Why was that a talking point for a 24-hour portion of this week, that he loves playing in the Mecca and he had his first game and was smiling from ear to ear? What basketball player doesn't enjoy playing in New York?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone's experienced the pain of dropped calls and internet outages, especially working remotely this last year. So here's the question. If you're the telco company, how do you help create better experiences for customers? Simple. ServiceNow digital workflows can help solve network problems faster and provide real-time status updates so customers aren't left in the dark. That's probably why ServiceNow workflows have helped telco companies see an increase in customer satisfaction. But proactive customer communication's only half the battle. With a single view of your back, middle, and front office operations, ServiceNow workflows also eliminate silos, keeping teams more in sync and more productive. With our scalable services, companies assure a better experience for both customers and employees on a single platform, the Now Platform. So how do you help provide a better network experience for customers? With ServiceNow for telecommunications to help streamline network operations. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. ServiceNow.
Yeah, I mean, it's not news. And look, if you want it to be news, you need a player to say that and then actually eventually sign with the Knicks. Mm-hmm. We've seen all these stars say that only to then spurn them. I hate the two things I really hate about this is, one, I feel for small market fans where it feels like their players are constantly being viewed as just trade fodder that they're eventually going to leave. And then especially with a player so young into his career, the way this, and regardless of how you feel about NBA's draft structure and free agent structure, the way restricted free agency works right now, the Pelicans aren't going to be in a position to where they have to think about Zion leaving for, you know, the next 5 years at least. So you have them for the first 4 years of their rookie scale contract. You'll sign them to a 4 or 5 year deal in restricted free agency or on an extension. If it's a 5 year deal, maybe there's a player option at the end. That's still 8 full years, and we're in his second season. So it's just like, come on. And I do hate that we try to spin this like, oh, maybe as a restricted free agent, he'll go to New York. No, that's not how it works. And even if it is, you need to see stars go to the Knicks first. They're definitely making their case to be more appealing this year. But now we've seen them whiff on so many different free agency pipe dreams. We've seen so many different players talk about how much they love playing at Madison Square Garden, only to not sign with the team or request a trade to the team that plays there. We've seen a ton of superstars want out over the years. And what's the last one to actually have the Knicks on their short list? It's probably Anthony Davis, but that felt sort of like an attaboy where everyone knew he was going to the Lakers anyway.
Yeah, It's just dumb. Like you said, it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened for a long time. This was like the bigger version of like the Hawks stuff. Remember when like the Hawks had all this cap space and they're like, there were Hawks fans talking about it. Like, what are they going to do with this cap space? Could they go after, make a run after AD? Or I'm like, you're out of your fucking mind. Like, what are we talking about? Like, this is Gallinari. Like, you're going to have to throw the max at him just to consider it. Like, this is Atlanta. What are you talking about? This has never, literally never happened. And it will never happen. Like, I think a lot of players like living in Atlanta and like hanging out in Atlanta. Guess what? They're not signing with Atlanta. It's the same thing with New York. And I don't know. It's just.
It would be cool if one marquee name just went with like the sexy basketball fit. Mm-hmm. You're like, regardless of the market, where I think the closest we've seen to that in recent memory and was when Paul Millsap went to the Nuggets.
Yeah.
In free agency. Like, just of how sought after he was. And that was like, oh, that's like the fit play. But he clearly.
Jimmy Butler kind of did that.
He did, but it's also Miami, and like that's their game. Is
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you chose the fit of Miami and the culture and everything else. I think that was kind of it, but it is a big market, yeah.
I need it to happen with Denver, Utah, Atlanta. It needs to be a team like that.
Giannis seemed like he was a possibility. Him staying in Milwaukee kind of signals that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who that next guy will be. The Knicks. We've mentioned them a little bit. They've won 7 straight. Can you explain to me how the Knicks are winning over and over and over again?
Yeah, look, Julius Randle's the engine on their offense, and he deserves all the credit in the world. He joins LeBron, and Jokic is the only player leading his team in points and assists this season. Still, I believe what he's doing is absolutely. I don't think that I'll have him on my All-NBA ballot, but like if people put him on there, he has an argument, especially with the amount of games now that Kawhi has missed and Davis has missed. The forward spots are going to be a little bit iffy. What I will say is that their defense is not a mirage. And I know you look at their shot profile. They give up a lot of looks at the rim. They give up a lot of threes. The pressure that they put on guys around the rim, Nerlens Noel has been a monster there this year. That's sort of by design. And then even with the three-pointers they're giving up, they do a great job of running opponents off the break or at least contesting those shots. And when they're helping off bad shooters in the corners. And so they're just very smart about the way they defend. You combine that with dictating the pace of play a lot, where they slow everything down. It's just, it could be a live ball turnover, defensive rebound after a made shot, whatever. They're going to be methodical about the way they're attacking. It can make for an infuriating offense at times, but when you have Julius Randle, who's playing so well, hitting these difficult shots, RJ Barrett has been a revelation as a number two option. There's more to plumb with him on the ball, but he's just turned into a really smart off-ball player at both ends, by the way. His
gets
off-ball
to the line.
What's that?
He gets to the line.
He's getting to the line more. I'd probably like to see him do that a lot more than he is. It feels like early in games, if you see him attack the rim on like one of the first 5 possessions, you're like, oh, it's going to be a good RJ Barrett free throw night. Otherwise, it won't be. And the other thing that's helped them is I still don't think they should be starting Elfrid Payton, but there's sort of a method to the madness there where they want to have Derrick Rose and Emmanuel quickly get reps together, and their bench mop unit is just straight dismantling opponents, where maybe it's not all bench players at once, but there could be 3 or 4 and you have, maybe Julius Randle's with them or RJ Barrett's with them. And so with all those guys, when they're at full strength, they are fairly deep. You look at these players that aren't necessarily considered long-term assets, but Reggie Bullock has been great for them on both ends. His defensive assignments are so tough. I already mentioned Nerlens Noel. Alec Burks has had a great year for them. I'm curious to see what happens to their offense in the playoffs, but their defense, I really think, is going to stand up. And they're another one of those teams where even if you don't pick them to win whatever series they end up pulling, it does feel like one of those situations where the opposing team will remember it in some form.
This is also how you get the attention of stars, right? Like playing this way, kind of like how Brooklyn played pre-stars, right? Like this is the way to do it with this group, this scrappy group that's winning a bunch, that has a bunch of role pieces that intrigue guys. Like this is actually the normal way of a big market finding their way, looking their way into stars. It's just like, don't just have cap space and no culture. Build with these young guys and build with what you have and play really hard and make the playoffs and do this kind of stuff. And then you're like, oh yeah, this is a competent organization now in a major city that I like playing basketball. And it's just all you need. Like they're now competent in a big market.
Yeah, and it's the timing of it's not necessarily.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking too. Like if they had done this just a couple years earlier, they might have a Kevin Durant and a Kyrie Irving.
Right, and there's just no big names to poach this year, so they're probably better off rolling over their flexibility to 2022 when right now Julius Randle will also be a free agent unless they extend him. The two things that worry me, and this is, I'm not trying to be like, oh, typical, doesn't watch the Knicks person. It's the minutes for Julius Randle and RJ Barrett are just, they're astronomical. RJ Barrett playing 46 minutes in regulation the other night. Julius Randle at 37.4 minutes per game for the season. I do worry about wear and tear, particularly when you're dealing with a truncated schedule. I know this team had a ton of time off because they weren't in the bubble. That's still sort of the red flag. And then the Knicks fan in me is just like, of course they're pretty good in a year where having a top five pick would have meant like potentially drafting another future superstar. Where it was, they've been kind of screwed by the lottery gods when you look at how bad they've been. And then even in the RJ Barrett draft, I think he's bridging the gap between Ja Morant, but it was considered that like, oh, one and two, Zion and Ja, like those are the all NBA future MVP type players. And the Knicks were three, and then they've dropped in other lotteries as well. This was the one where it felt like almost foolproof because the like top four to six picks or whatever feel like they're those potential franchise changers. At the same time, as you already mentioned, I do think it's a big deal for them because of the market they play in, because of how they've tried to rebuild via free agency in the past, that it now appears there's now a rhyme or reason to how they're operating on the court, and they have that culture laid bare. That should wind up helping them a ton as we look the next couple of years ahead.
That's fair. Why is nobody taking Milwaukee seriously coming out of the East?
Didn't you hit on this already? You said they're a worse version of the team they were last year. I feel like it's...
That is my perspective.
I think we have Bucks fatigue because I don't think they're that inferior of a version compared to last season. They're not beating winning teams as much. They're 15 and 16 against opponents under 500. And they've also tried some, their basketball X's and O's guys just way smarter than I am that have pointed this out ad nauseum. And you watch them, you see it. They're trying different things on defense. They've switched more. They're Giannis to the five lineups. Some of them have worked, but like the personnel that they have right now, pre-PJ Tucker being healthy anyway, wasn't ideally suited to doing that. And so some of those lineups have all this loud noise. I think once you get to the playoffs, though, the full breadth of the changes they've made on offense and defense are going to be seen. All of that said, there's still just a looming specter of, well, what's going to happen with Giannis in the postseason when he goes up against certain defenses? We've seen him be willing to take threes. We've seen him be able to hit those, step back mid-range jumpers or those fadeaways, but they just never go down at this super efficient clip. And does he get to a point where he's hitting those looks in the playoffs at a semi-consistent clip even? Because that does still feel like their determining factor if they're going to come out of the East and eventually win a title. But to me, looking at the way they've played this year and the way that it feels like they're a little bit more willing to change, I think you can still question some of Mike Budenholzer's lineup decisions for sure. I view them as more dangerous in the postseason this year than I did last year.
That's fair. I don't know. Drew Holiday's been really good, and that just feels bad because I'm like, I love Drew Holiday, and he's really good for them, and he's been really important and a different kind of guy that they have not had in previous years. So the Bucks fatigue is not all the way fair there, but the Dante DiVincenzo, you know who they could really use? Bogey. That is a player they could really use.
Yeah, that would be ideal for them. And I mean, look, they could have had him.
Yes.
So that's,
but that's what I'm saying. Like when people talk about it, it's like, that's an under talked about point with them, is that like, if they had just completed the Bogey thing, like that's the final piece. That's where they're missing.
Yeah, that other sort of, it does feel like they're another like wing defender short where they almost missed Torrey Craig a little bit too. I don't know, but they weren't playing him when they gave him away for free. So I don't really know how much that matters. But yeah, I mean, Bogey on this team would have playoff proofed their offense in a way that I think you can argue it's not playoff proof right now. You can envision it working, but there's still that element of unsettling mystery. I think Bogey would have taken that out of the equation, especially if he was playing the way he's been playing in Atlanta over the past few weeks.
What's going on with Portland?
Is I don't know an acceptable answer. I mean, Dame missing a few games certainly hurts them. I did find it funny that they lost a one possession game to the Clippers, and 7 seconds later, there was the news that Dame was playing against the Nuggets on Wednesday. It was like he saw that, texted Yahoo Sports' Chris Haynes, "I'm back." Like, was just like, I won't stand for this any longer. They play too many close games for their own good at this point. And even if you trust them in those situations, they're going to have to start beating good teams eventually if they want to win in the playoffs. And that's been an issue for them all year, as has been being at full strength. Like, they just haven't been. CJ McCollum missed a ton of time. Nurkic has missed a ton of time. But they're 11-18 against opponents above 500, which is tied for the worst record among West playoff teams, aside from Golden State Warriors. I don't really know how to view the play-in spots. I keep getting tripped up when looking at the top 10 seeds. But so I don't know that they're built to necessarily change that. We'll see. I think Norman Powell adds the, you know, downhill element to their offense that they didn't really have, but it might come at the expense of defense just because he's smaller than Gary Trent Jr. was. Their defense is not good this year. It's played well for spurts, and I think you look at their personnel when there's Robert Covington and, you know, even Norman Powell to some extent. You do have Derek Jones Jr., but he's not playing a ton. Nasir Little's given them some good minutes this year.
Yeah, I don't
understand
that one.
It feels like they have the personnel that will be better defensively than they are.
Yeah, like Harry Giles is getting DNP CDs.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I don't know that it's solvable with what they have. And the fact that they've been 22nd in defensive efficiency since April 1st, and that's like a massive improvement for what they've done this season, might just say it all. And that's coincided with sort of a weird offensive drop-off in, you know, just point score possession and also the way that they're shooting. Some of that I do think is Damian Lillard has missed these past few games, but they still feel one player short of being a legitimate contender. And it's not this like, oh, had they traded for, you know, had they been the team that scooped up Torrey Craig, who's making a huge difference in Phoenix. No, it's like a real...
They got Robert Covington to do that.
Right. And it's, he was never, he's always been like a better team defender, not this one-on-one guy. They would have, I do wonder, would they be a better team if they had Aaron Gordon instead of Robert Covington, who himself is not a lockdown defender, but he's better one-on-one.
All that being said, I still would want no part of Portland in round one. I would not want any part of Lillard, McCollum, Powell, Roko, and Nurkic. I still would want no part of it.
No, I don't think you would. And so of the three teams, I think we've kind of already written off the Warriors. If you're just one of the upper echelon West teams, who do you not want to face the most out of the Mavericks with Luka, the Warriors with Steph, and the Blazers with Dame?
Blazers.
I'm with you. Just CJ's, by the way, CJ is, I think people kind of jumped ship on him when ESPN had him number 13 in one of their recent top 100 player rankings like 2 or 3 years ago. He's been a monster consistently in the playoffs. And to have two scorers at that caliber between him and Dame is absolutely terrifying.
And then adding Norman Powell, because they haven't really had that kind of wing, who's just so comfortable shooting. Like, Norman Powell, it's just going to be another guy who's just not going to be afraid to get up shots if one of those two are not going off. As we wrap up here, Dan, stats as of right now that you've been intrigued by parsing through the NBA math.
So this one, it's a basic one, but it still sort of shocks me. Nicholas Batum leads the Clippers in total minutes played this season. That's when you look at the injuries they've dealt with, that makes sense.
But I was going to say, that doesn't actually, I've watched a lot of Clippers, that does make sense. And he's not even starting anymore.
It makes sense, but at the same time, it's like, think about where he was with Charlotte the past couple years and how they just picked him up. Yeah. So that's just absolutely mind-blowing to me. Another thing I'm watching, the Kings are not good. They're good on some nights, and then they're just absolutely awful for these long stretches. De'Aaron Fox is so ridiculous, and I think there are concerns about his jumper, and he's not shooting a high clip from three, but he's, one, getting to the foul line a ton, and he's also shooting 43.8% on step back three pointers this year, 23 of 55. That's a real shot for him right now. And so he is, you know, you talk about swing pieces for the future. This isn't just like some cutesy fringe all-star. He has a chance to make all NBA one day soon. He is that level of good. And now you're pairing him with Tyrese Halliburton. Can you keep Rashawn Holmes when he hits free agency this season? And the other thing that I'm watching is, you know, I've been focusing a lot on bad teams lately, but the Timberwolves, they just have a ton of tough decisions coming up, and a lot of it's going to hinge on what happens with that top three protected pick they owe to Golden State. When you look on paper, that five-man core of D'Lo, Malik Beasley, Anthony Edwards, Jane McDaniels, and Karl-Anthony Towns, it makes so much sense, but because of injuries, you had Beasley's suspension too, but I think D'Lo was injured for that entirety. Now Beasley's injured himself. Those five, they've played 0 seconds together this season. And so that's a lineup once Minnesota's at full strength. If they get there, Beasley could technically be done for the year. I'm very interested to see get some run this season.
D'Lo's been a lot better as of late off the bench.
There's value in pick and roll maestros who can hit off the dribble jumpers. No, yeah. He's not the all-star that he became in Brooklyn, but he's like, he adds value, and we have to start evaluating him independent of his contract. And
yeah, if you just look at him as like a third guard, he's a valuable third guard.
And I do wonder though, like, how long does this him coming off the bench stuff really stick? There hasn't been rumblings that there. That
I mean, that's
been
what it should be. If you put him back in the lineup and you have him as one of your core pieces, then you've already fucked up. Like that should be like that ship. It needs to have sailed. Like you have to have that tough conversation with D'Lo. Like you're a third guard. You're Lou Williams. You need to accept that. Goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, I get it for defensive reasons, but you also look at this the iffiness of shooting and who they've started the past three games, where you have like, and you know, part of this is because Malik Beasley isn't there. So I totally get that. But like having Rubio, Okogie, and McDaniels is just not a high volume 3-point shooter. And then Edwards, who is touch and go there. There's
also
just a lot.
Jarrett Culver getting DMP CDs is not great.
The decision to trade up for him in 2019.
Yeah, that's not looking
Looking great. And this team becomes like, you need, and you could say this of any number one overall pick, but you need Anthony Edwards to go boom if you wind up sending that pick to Golden State this year, because what is your path towards more improvement? You don't have cap space. You're not a free agent destination anyway. You have your own draft picks moving forward, but you're now mortgaging more of your future to trade for a star. And we're, you know, I just talked about how I don't like people eyeing small market stars, but the Timberwolves have not been good around Karl Anthony Towns. He has 3 years left on his deal after this one, so it's not theoretically an issue, but pre-agency has become an actual thing, like between a year and a half to 2 years out from a player's actual free agency. And so next season, if they're not good, after that, I think you do get to a point where it could get pretty uncomfortable.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. Give me one fun thing about the Orlando Magic.
Wendell Carter Jr. is playing fairly well for them.
Okay.
But since he's been traded over.
I like Chuma Okeke. He's good.
Chuma Okeke's good. I just thought that was sort of known by this point that he's been solid. Has more ball skills, I think, than a lot of people realize when they drafted him. We pigeonhole these guys like, oh, they did that for 3-and-D. And it's kind of happened with Sadiq Bey in Detroit. It's like, oh, he can do like a little bit more on the ball. And so if they can, you know, get some reboot from Wendell Carter Jr., I think Mo Bamba has had some better stretches now too. And I don't think we've weighed the fact that he really, like, COVID hit him hard, and he was basically trying to get back all the way until the season, still isn't even really all the way back. And then the other thing with them, I think RJ Hampton's going to be good. His offense is a little bit chaotic right now, but you can see the skeleton of what's going to end up being a really, like, confident and versatile offensive player who's able to keep defenses on tilt in the half court.
Yeah. All right, Dan. Well, that's all I've got. What would you like to plug as we wrap up here today?
I did publish an article today where I looked at the futures of the NBA's worst teams. That's why I was just so involved in looking at numbers for that. So if they go to Bleacher Report, they will find that article up and running.
All right. Well, go do that. Go subscribe to Hardwood Knox on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. If you're not...
Oh, yeah, I'm a terrible self-promoter. I have a podcast myself.
You do. You do a very good one. A very good NBA podcast. So go do that. If you have not already, go check out all the great pods, even American Prodigy right now. I think it's top five on sports. The King Griffey podcast. So go check that out. If you've not already, John. That was yesterday. Dan Pavalli, thank you as always. Talk to you soon.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.